Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
John McClain is back in Houston after a long week in Atlanta. Super Bowl 53, he had the Hall of Fame vote, and much more. Joined us on Radio Row last week at the World Congress Center. Phone lines are available. Time to recap Super Bowl 53, look ahead to the offseason, discuss anything involving the Super Bowl. Everything from the week leading up and all the storylines to how the game played out to the halftime show. John was there to take in all of it. 615-737-1045, our number. And I should mention the Hall of Fame vote as well. 615-737-1045 if you'd like to talk with John McClain. He's presented by FreelandChevy.com. John, how are you?
I'm back from Atlanta. Got in last night. I left late. Usually, I stay over till Tuesday to avoid those big crowds. But this year, I left. The time I got there, it wasn't as nearly as bad as it had been. I was so early. It was 2.5 hours of security. And then when I left, a friend of mine went through it, said it took him 1 hour and 40 minutes. And I only had to wait about 15 minutes.
As we begin to take your calls for John McClain, want to mention, right now you can win a pair of tickets to Tennessee and Florida this coming Saturday at Thompson Bowling Arena. Be caller 5 to David Reed. Just call the right number, 615-737-ZONE, 737-0663. 737-0663 is that number. You'll win a pair of tickets to see Tennessee and Florida this Saturday in Knoxville.
John, was that your first time inside a Mercedes-Benz Stadium, or had you been there before?
Nope, it was my first time. And, you know, press box is in the end, which I never like, but it's a sign of the times. And I watched the big screen most of the time because it was live, and it's the second best screen I've ever seen to the one that the Cowboys have.
What'd you think overall of Atlanta as a host? And I know Hutton talked about his experience at his first Super Bowl, but how it was handled inside as well at Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Well, I didn't get out hardly at all. The only time I left my room because I had a bad back was when I went to the media center. I ate room service in my hotel, all but one meal, Saturday night. And so the one thing I noticed from the time I got there was how nice and helpful everyone was. Everybody has been told, of course, to be on their best behavior. I didn't see a lot of traffic issues till Friday and Saturday night, which is always to be expected when you have all your events downtown and people start to come in on Thursday for those four-night minimums. The stadium was great. I thought the press box was plentiful. And so I did not have a bad experience at all, except my the one personally, but that was my fault to begin with. And I thought the game, while a defensive anybody who loves defense would have loved that game. I was really disappointed that it was so low scoring.
John McClain with us. Again, the number 737-1045. John, I'd been to Radio Row. This is my 12th visit to a Super Bowl Radio Row. First time going to the game. And I told the guys yesterday, I had two goosebump moments. Number one, the national anthem and everything involved, where they play the big open for CBS with Peyton Manning and Malkovich and everyone else involved, leading up to the coin toss, and then the national anthem and America the Beautiful. That set the table. And then the other moment for me, 10 minutes left, fourth quarter, during the commercial break, the 70% Patriots fans in attendance started chanting Brady for the first time during the game. And that led to Brady trotting out on the field and putting together that scoring drive. Everyone that was watching the broadcast, Romo and Nance pointed out that they were chanting Brady midway through the drive. That actually started during the commercial break in-house. And that was just one of those cool moments where, as you saw 12 take the field, you knew you were watching something special.
Well, they've seen it so many times where he brings them from behind, or he secures a victory. And I think you're definitely right about 70%. I would have thought 80%.
Yeah.
It's amazing how few Rams fans I saw, and even on at the airport yesterday, I don't think I saw a Rams jersey. It was all Patriots. And the gate next to mine was going to Boston, and I think there was a law that said you had to wear a Brady jersey to get on that flight because everybody was wearing a jersey. In the press box, you can't – were you in the auxiliary box?
I moved around quite a bit, honestly, John, but I was up there, yes.
Well, you couldn't – in the press box, you couldn't hear anything. And I like that because on game day, you want to be able to hear the press box PA. Now, they give you an earpiece where you can listen, but I don't – you know, I listened to Maroon 5, and I think I tweeted afterward. I said, you know, I got moves like Jagger, too, but I don't have to take my shirt off. I could have lived without Adam Levine showing off his tattoos, but – and I could not hear the national anthem, but I did tweet that the two best halftime shows that I've ever seen was Prince playing Purple Rain in a driving rainstorm in Miami. And the other one was U2 playing in New Orleans, and Bono was singing with the names of those killed at 9/11 scrolling behind them. Those were the two most memorable halftime shows I've ever seen. And I remember one more when Michael Jackson performed. It was at the height of his popularity, right after Thriller. And I look around, and everybody is standing in the press box. All these old white guys, except one from New York, Dave Klein. And I think it was Mike Lupica that yelled at him, something like, "Klein, how can you not watch this?" And Dave looked up and said, "Who's playing?" And so that was the third one, was seeing Michael Jackson.
Mm. Hey, John, before we get to some calls coming up, tell everyone why there was an empty seat next to you in the press box and why the NFL did what they did.
There were two empty seats, one for two writers, longtime NFL writers who died, and one of them being Paul Zimmerman, Dr. Z from Sports Illustrated, and the one next to me, and I thanked him so much for not being there because I had more room, was the late, great Jerry McGee from the San Diego Union. Jerry was covering the AFL starting in 1960. He died last year at 91 in his beloved San Diego. And he was a character just like Dr. Z. And I thought that was such a class thing for the NFL to do. And I tweeted that, and somebody got back to me and said, "This is not the right time. There's a lot of other media people who've died that you shouldn't single anybody out." Well, I disagree because these guys covered the league for decades. Plus, they were on the Hall of Fame selection committee, and they did so much to promote the NFL and teams in their area.
Phone lines are open if you want to jump in. 615-737-1045, 737-1045. John, I'm curious, if you took your shirt off in a performance, would your belly say Texas the way Adam Levine said California?
No, because nobody would see it.
John's only pro tattoos if he can show them off.
That's right. John, as always, we go to the phones, and Brad will lead us off. Brad, welcome.
All right. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hey, Brad.
The question for John, Paul, if you have some insight on this too, much appreciated. My question is about the 2019 Hall of Fame class, a very strong class, well deserved by each one of those gentlemen. I wanted to get a sense of either momentum or maybe a lack of momentum for Jacksonville Jaguar Tony Boselli. 4 years as semifinalist, 3 years as a finalist, if you have any information about that.
Thank you, Brad. We're getting John back on. John is back on the phone. Paul, start with Boselli.
I think the room likes him very much. He had a short career because of the shoulder injury, and that's the one chip in his case. I know Terrell Davis made it as a shorter career guy. Terrell Davis, though, had the best postseason running back career of anybody. Bocelli doesn't have something like that to set him apart. That's why, to me, out of the four offensive linemen, you have to, I think, look at him last. And I think Hutchinson and Faneca, in many ways, need to kind of go in together because it's so hard to differentiate the two of them. I think maybe they go in together next year. And I think Bocelli's getting in. I just think he's probably getting in last of the four guys.
John, any thoughts on Bocelli?
Yeah, first of all, I wanted to tell your listeners, Paul did a terrific job presenting Kevin Mawai, and that's one reason that Mawai got the Hall of Fame, which was hard to do considering the competition of Faneca and Hutchinson. I thought that Hutchinson should have gone first. When it gets down to, and I put all four linemen in my cut from 15 to 10, and I think that I put Mawai and Hutchinson in the cut from 10 to 5.
I did too.
Because I think we need more linemen in there. And I'll say this about Bocelli. And I thought Anthony Munoz, who I think is the greatest left tackle in history, certainly the best I've ever seen. I think he's acknowledged as that. And he just loved Tony Bocelli. When Bocelli was healthy, he was as good as Orlando Pace, Jonathan Ogden, and Walter Jones, all of whom are in the Hall of Fame and all of whom had longer careers. And I think if you were as good as the best, that you deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. There's others, Gale Sayers, Doak Walker. There's guys that got in with Les, Dwight Stevenson, that then Bocelli. The problem is there's just too much competition. If it just been Tony Bocelli and all the other positions, I think he would have gotten in. And I hope eventually all of them get in, because they deserve it. It was a very, very difficult vote. It is hard to reduce the list from 15 to 10, and it's almost impossible to reduce it from 10 to 5. And then when it comes to the 5, I'll vote yes on all of them every year.
Back to the phones. Bama Boy is next. Hey, Bama.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
Great.
Great. Excellent.
Hey, John, question for you, and Paul, you can chime in on this as well. I know you've been on the committee for a long time, John. Great Alabama player, great Dallas Cowboy, great human being, Leroy Jordan. How is he not in the Hall of Fame, and is there going to be a chance to get him in, or are they going to wait till he dies like they did Kenny Stabler?
Well, first of all, Leroy was Leroy Jordan, and I watched him growing up, and I've talked to people with the Cowboys then and the Cowboys now. And while I thought Leroy was a really good middle linebacker who was great at times, he wasn't consistently great. They thought Chuck Howley, who played outside, was actually a greater player. The problem is when you play a 4-3, you don't get a lot of chances to rush the quarterback like 3-4 outside linebackers do. And Leroy and Chuck, their names come up every year on the seniors committee. And I'm not going to say he's not ever going to get in there. You know, Tommy Novus hadn't gotten in there. Tommy Novus was a really good inside middle linebacker who was great sometimes. But there just hasn't been a lot of love for Leroy Jordan because there's so much competition.
Phone lines are open. If you want to jump in and talk some football with John McClain, we can talk Super Bowl. We can talk Hall of Fame. Give us a call, 615-737-1045, 737-1045.
Well, John, while we're discussing the overall Hall of Fame discussion, I know you guys can't say everything that happens in that room, but we did see two defensive backs get in, two corners get in with Law and with Bailey. So with all that in mind, there was not one guy canceling out the other that we thought going in. At least that's what the outside talk was.
I mean, the case for Law was phenomenally well done by Ron Borges from Boston, who made it without chopping down Bailey, which is the graceful dance you have to do in that
and
room.
And tough to do.
And I thought he was probably the MVP of presenters in that room, something I was vying for and didn't get because he clearly got it.
Well, first of all, Paul, did you see the column Gary Myers wrote on The Athletic yesterday? I tweeted it, retweeted it. It told all these things that went on behind the scenes, and I'll be surprised if he doesn't get suspended. 1 year, Ira Miller got suspended for writing things you're not supposed to write, and he put a lot of stuff in there. And I thought Bailey was a lock, and I voted for Ty Law every year. I spoke up on two guys, but one guy, Ty Law, I think, and because a good friend of mine, Ted Johnson, played with him there all 10 years. And of course, Ted had always said he should be in the Hall of Fame. And then I asked him why, and he explained about him being great zone man, different man zone, everything he did. Plus, he's got three rings. So I'm glad both of them made it. Last year before, we had two receivers. Year before that, two running backs. So maybe next year we'll have two safeties or two more offensive linemen.
I thought Atwater probably suffered from the Ty Law, the great Ty Law case, because I felt like there was good support for Atwater during the conversation.
Well, I also thought there's no way three Broncos were going in the Hall of Fame at the same time. And once we knew Bolin was going to be voted in and we knew Champ Bailey was going to be voted in, that's what hurt Atwater. And that was the closest he's come in a while. And I've always thought Steve Atwater's may have been the hardest hitting safety in history. And when him and Dennis Smith played back there, it is amazing how good those guys were. Now, I'll tell you something interesting. Johnny Robinson, the safety for the Dallas Texans / Kansas City Chiefs, I believe that seven defensive players off of that team that won one Super Bowl. And that's more than, I think, anybody on either side of the ball.
Was there a longer discussion for Pat Bowlen or Gil Brandt?
Gil Brandt. But I don't know why. We're gonna rubber stamp those guys. And so I always think we don't need long presentations for the senior and the two contributors, unless it's like Paul Tagliabue, who had already been turned down a couple times as a finalist. Gil, it was just a love fest about Gil, except for one guy, we can't say who it was, who had the line of the day talking about Gil, but I was glad Gil got it because he's had an impact on the NFL since 1959 when the Cowboys hired him, and he was a part-time Rams part-time Rams scout. He owned a baby photography business in Milwaukee when Tex Ram hired him in 1959. And Gil, of course, 85, still has a big impact on the NFL.
It was ridiculous for him to be the longest conversation because it was just people telling their personal stories about him and reconfirming what everybody had already said.
John, just overall thoughts first from the Patriots' defensive game plan against the Rams' offense. What did you think?
From what I read, the defensive game plan drawn up by Belichick and defense coordinator Brian Flores, who was just hired by Miami yesterday's head coach, confused Goff with they had played more man than zone, and they played a lot more zone than man, but they showed man coverage. And they ran a lot of stunts, loops, played a lot of games with their front seven they hadn't showed before. They kept their offensive line off balance. They knocked him down 12 times. They sacked him 4 times. They confused him. It looked like they made him gun-shy. And Jason McCourty, the former Titan, made, I thought, the play of the game. When Goff held the ball too long, Brandon Cooks was wide open, and he threw late and allowed Cooks to get over and break up a touchdown pass. McCourty to break up the touchdown pass to Cooks. And so it was a masterpiece. And Wade Phillips had a great game plan. To give up one touchdown to Tom Brady, that doesn't happen. And I thought it was so interesting. The Rams averaged 32.9 points. They scored at least 30 12 times in regular season and once in the playoffs, and then they score their fewest points. Patriots score their fewest points in a Super Bowl, but they have their first game that's not decided by one score. It was just, when we look back on it 50 years from now and you see it, you're going to go, wow, didn't they have any offensive players? In the Rams running game, Todd Gurley has disappeared. They swore he was healthy. That is almost as inexplicable that he could disappear in two games like that if he was healthy. The Rams run more play action than any team in the league. And if your backs are not carrying the ball a lot and gaining some yardage, you don't have to have everybody devoted to stopping the run. And that's what happened. I just thought it may have been the greatest game plan in Super Bowl history.
Well, so Gurley today, the reports are he's not speaking to the media as they clean out their lockers and have exit physicals. But you're right. Post-game, he said he's fine. McVay all week said he's fine and then doubled down on that post-game. Again, there's something behind the scenes going on. I don't think he's healthy, John. I mean, when I watch him, his gait back to the huddle, it looks like the guy is favoring the knee, which I'm sure he is. But also, I see tweets and reports that he was clocked as the fastest player on the field inside that dome on Sunday. So something's up.
I think that we'll see things start to trickle out about Todd Gurley. But the fact is, C.J. Anderson didn't do squat either in the last two games. You know, they were both great against the Cowboys, and then they went south for the winter. So it wasn't just Gurley. They didn't run the ball as much as they wanted. They weren't as effective as they wanted to be. And they're the best screen team in the league, and Gurley is the best screen back. They didn't do that either.
Reports yesterday that former Baylor head coach Art Briles was interviewing with Southern Miss. Richard Cross, who covers Southern Miss in Hattiesburg, just tweeted, according to sources in what has been referred to as an unofficial team meeting, Art Briles was introduced to the Southern Miss football team in Hattiesburg. Talked to a lot of folks about this today. In summation, it's complicated. John, what do you think about your alma mater's former head coach looking like he's getting that second chance that, quite honestly, most of us thought he would get because he's a very talented coach?
I thought that everybody deserves a second chance. It got to be where Art Briles got blamed for everything bad that's ever happened at Baylor. His mistake was, and when you're the CEO of a company, you got to pay close attention to what's going on and not telling people to handle it. And he deserved to be fired from Baylor, even though he was their greatest coach. And so because Art, people don't want to hear this, but it's a fact. I've known him for years. I haven't talked to him now for over a year, but I always liked him. I liked him when he was at University of Houston and I got to know him. And, of course, I liked him at Baylor. I'm happy he's getting a second chance. If people get out of prison who've murdered people deserve to get a second chance, why wouldn't Art Briles? And he's going to do a tremendous job with that offense. Is the head coach, do y'all know, does he have an offensive or defensive background? Because if he leaves that offense to Briles and gives him a chance to recruit a quarterback, won't be a big name, he likes small-town quarterbacks, and he'll have an offense that is always good running, he'll have Southern Miss's, within 2 years, one of the most prolific offenses in the country.
Back to the phones, and we say hello to Reed, who's been waiting patiently. Reed, thanks so much. Go right ahead with John McClain.
No problem. Hello, boys. Appreciate the show. Hi, Paul. Hey, I want to ask a question to John. With the amount of transfers and all the swapping that players get to do, does Tom Brady hold the record for the most Super Bowl rings, or the other players with more or equal the number of rings? That's it. Enjoy the show. Have a good week.
I believe, does he have, officially, he has the most Super Bowl rings in history of six. I believe a couple of guys, one from the Dolphins, who's been on two teams, and maybe, I can't remember how many Charles Haley had. But anyway, Brady has the most. Belichick has the most Super Bowl victories. He is tied with six championships with Green Bay's Curly Lambeau and Chicago's George Halas. So, you know, Belichick, as competitive as he is, he wants to win that next one where he will be alone by himself at the top of that Mount Rushmore of coaches.
I do remember seeing that on Sunday. Brady now holds the record for the most rings by any NFL player.
Past Haley.
Haley had five. He won 2 in San Francisco and 3 in Dallas. Not bad. It's a lot of jewelry.
I'd just like to cover a team here one day that went to the Super Bowl. We haven't had a team play in the NFC Championship game since the Oilers after the 1979 season.
What'd you think of McVay and what he had to say post game about how he just never was able to get into a rhythm? I was surprised just because of how they always found their rhythm, even when they were down big. What were they down, 14 or 17 against, I'm trying to think back, against New Orleans, and they came back in that one. They're only down 3 at the half, and they found nothing in that game.
I think the Patriots had done nothing defensively that made us think they were capable of that kind of brilliant performance, not to mention a brilliant game plan that they carried out to perfection. The Rams had one game, the 15-6 loss at Chicago in bad weather in December, in which they didn't score. And I kept thinking they were going to break out of it, and the Patriots just wouldn't let them. And I thought they were going to score on that last series when the interception was thrown to Stephon Gilmore. And he got out-coached. The guy's 33 years old. He's got a lot better coaches than him have been out-coached by Bill Belichick, especially when he has 2 weeks to prepare. And I think it was more a case of the Patriots having a great defensive game plan than the Rams spinning the bit, so to speak.
Yep.
And any other year, Wade Phillips would be getting praised like crazy for limiting the Patriots to one touchdown.
You okay with Edelman being the MVP?
Well, I voted on it. The reason I voted on it, he had 10 catches, 141 yards, 8 for first downs, had a catch on every scoring drive, and somebody said Gilmore. And Gilmore's interception, let's be honest, we could have caught that ball.
He had a forced fumble, too.
He didn't make a great play. The ball came right to him. It was a bad pass. And so I felt comfortable when Tony Romo was asked by Jim Nantz right at the end, who would be your MVP, said Edelman. And so I thought, okay, well, if Romo thinks that I'm not going to feel bad about it, you'd like to have given it to their whole defense.
Yeah.
Dante Hightower had
three
hits on the quarterback, but only 2 tackles. So I thought Edelman had a bigger impact on the game than any individual player.
John, thank you as always. We will talk with you on Friday.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you very much as always.